Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. It's last Sunday in April 2018. As I was coming out of the house this rather chilly afternoon, Anna said to me, "Why don't you do something about the insecurity of life?" And this would certainly make a nice, short, straightforward podcast, which would hopefully be useful to some people. Puts me in mind of a rather good book by Alan Watts called The Wisdom of Insecurity. And it's a short, well-written, easy-to-read, populist, I suppose, exhortation to people in general to relax with the insecurity of life, because there's not really that much we can do about it at the bottom. It's a book I've bought dozens of copies of just simply to give to people who are making heavy weather of the tough stuff that life throws up, or even worse than that, the tough stuff that life might throw up. So, it's some time since I've read Watts's book, so I'm not going to really try and paraphrase what I can remember of it particularly, but I'm just going to go my own way with the same idea, the wisdom of insecurity. Now, this notion that life is insecure, we need to nuance this a little bit. A lot of human effort goes into staving off or protecting against the insecurity of life. And with some success, though, without ever finally and ineluctably taking it out of the equation of human life. In this society, we live to quite a ripe old age on average these days, and even across the world, as poor as some places are and undeveloped, there has nevertheless been over the last few decades an increase in life expectancy. In other words, the insecurity of life has been attenuated somewhat, and this is done with all kinds of things. Clean water, proper sewage, education, medicine, availability of medicine at affordable prices, preventative medicine, which can be things like draining mosquito swamps or vaccination, and public education about disease vectors and so on. And it's in the human project, and something that we're wired for is to preserve, protect, and enhance life with our ingenuity, our brain power. Our brain power assisted with language abilities. In other words, the ability through communication and information exchange to work as collectivities on projects, thereby achieving efficiencies of division of labour and cooperation and so on. I would say that extolling the virtues of the wisdom of insecurity, of embracing insecurity, doesn't preclude this very human activity of preserving and enhancing life. We are bound to do that. Of course we're going to do that. But at the same time, death will come. And this is the big ineluctable. Now, I know some people think that there will be some kind of immortality by uploading somebody's psyche and memories into a computer, or regenerating bodies with stem cells and organs from chimera animals. And the idea of some kind of immortality, or at least vastly increased longevity, is sort of quite big, and there's effort going into it. At the same time, it's been a fantasy throughout many ancient cultures that through sort of meditative practices and alchemical practices that life could be extended to by a very great deal. Certain strains of Hatha Yoga are undertaken, the practices are undertaken for that reason. And it's a big theme in the alchemical Taoism, the idea of longevity is a great value. And in fact, the idea even of immortality. And of course, religions play with the idea. They tell us that we have an immortal soul, certain religions, which will persist post-mortem in some kind of heavenly place or some hellish place. You know, this is an idea that's held sway for a long time and has informed the behaviour and the thought and the feeling of people all over the planet. And there are various articulations of this. Even the reincarnation idea is one that says, well, you're going to live thousands and thousands of times, that your soul is as near immortal as damn it. There is the hope, but it's thought to be a remote hope, that you can kind of disappear altogether. But nevertheless, there's the idea of some kind of post-mortem existence has persisted. And I would say, just to be awkward, as a compensation for the real fact of mortality, which of course we know that our bodies, which we like rather a lot, are mortal. We just know that, there's no question about that. So that's the bottom line, you might say. It's death, mortality. But there's loads of other misfortunes waiting for us. Disease, crippling disease, breakup of relationships, loss of significant others, rise and fall of fortune, being rich and suddenly becoming poor, and actually, strangely, being poor and suddenly becoming rich. All of these can discombobulate and derail a life and bring suffering. In a sense, human life is characterised by suffering waiting to happen, sooner rather than later. You can do some stuff about it, but you can't give any foolproof guarantees. And this is the insecurity of life. And what would the wisdom of insecurity be? Well, it would be figuring out the things we can do something about and the things that we can't do anything about. And if you can't do anything about a certain situation, a certain fact of existence, seems little point busting the gut trying to go against it. And there seems little point being anxious about it. Now, when we're anxious, it overtakes us. It's quite hard to stop some of these reactions. They are called reactions because they happen almost regardless of any good sense or logic that we might be able to muster. I know it's silly being anxious about the fact that I will die, but it's a tall order to just turn it off. But this was Alan Watts' thing, is that we relax about the things we can't change. And go with the flow. He was very much a go with the flow man, especially in his later years when he embraced Taoism and wrote a rather good book, his last book, called Tao, the Watercourse Way, which really draws out the wisdom of insecurity from certain key Gerish concepts. And again, this is a highly readable book. You don't have to be any kind of scholar of Derism or classical Chinese or difficult metaphysical concepts to use it. And I do think actually it is useful in individual lives. It actually just makes lots of sense to settle into this raw nature of life, its edge of potential suffering. And what's actually interesting that is when you settle into that rawness and you're okay with it and you're moving around in the world fully cognizant of that potentiality for suffering to happen, that attitude actually vivifies everything, makes everything alive and sparkly and preternatural and beautiful and sublime. The contrary, the attempt to somehow repress these initially uncomfortable feelings of anxiety around mortality and suffering, has the effect of deadening the senses and deadening the sensitivity of the organism. We hear a lot about meditation these days. And I would say, yeah, great. This is wonderful. But it doesn't seem to get emphasised very much that the meditation project proceeds apace when one is sensitive and open and receptive to existence itself in all of its rawness. So there's this other effect of the wisdom of insecurity. I mean, summarising these effects now. One, it's sensible. No point railing against what you can't change. Two, it makes life better because you're not anxious. Three, not being anxious as your root basic state means that you become sensitive and open and receptive to the beauty of the world and its peoples and creatures and objects and the sublimity of existence too. That's a wonderful, overpowering intensity that existence can show us sometimes. And lastly, I'll just reiterate that none of this means that we don't work on projects to make the world a better place. Even though, as I keep harping on about, we do need to figure out what better place means and how this might be accomplished. Okay, it's short. And as always, I hope it's helpful to somebody out there. Pretty straightforward, really. Relax. Don't be frightened. Enjoy. Thank you for listening, and speak soon.